And welcome to the Totally Scottish Football Show. I'm Andrew Slavin, and our Scottish Cup overfloweth with goals and drama this weekend. Never mind Messi v Ronaldo, Sunday saw Cosgrove versus Dobie. St Mirren got the hairdryer treatment thanks to Nicky Clark. And at Rugby Park, Rangers were awarded a penalty. I know, I'm as shocked as you are. The Scottish Women's Premier League season kicked off this weekend. Could Hibs break Glasgow City's streak? In the men's game, are Hibs about to appoint a muscle-bound manager? Keep your beefy hands off Craig Levine, we need his patter. And speaking of the capital, Edinburgh City continue their quest for promotion from League Two. We'll be speaking to sporting director and Scottish Cup winner, the original JJ, Jim Jeffries, is on the podcast. But joining me in the studio from The Telegraph, the new JJ, JJ Bull.
The best JJ.
And from Copper 90, it's Laura Brannan.
The best Laura Brannan.
Say it with conviction, Laura.
Yeah, say it with conviction. How are you all? Did you have good fun in the Scottish Cup fever?
Yes, I got to watch it on a big TV. My sister has a big TV.
How big?
50 inches.
Whoa.
That's a whole lot of inches. That's a whole lot of TV.
I got to watch it in a Rangers supporters club in London.
Oh, cool. Where was that?
It was actually not far from Angel.
What's the place called?
It's ironically called The Green Man.
You're joking. Yeah. You are joking. Did they choose that deliberately or something?
I don't know if it's a chicken and the egg scenario here. What came first? Oh, Talbot, 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 my heart and my soul. Follow the gold and the black and watch history unfold. The Auchinleck adventure is over. The Junior Scottish Cup run ended in round 5 at Tynecastle on Sunday as Hearts won 4-0 to advance to the last 8. Gordon Senior from the Hearts Review podcast joins us now. Gordon, it's been a good couple of weeks for Hearts, not just yesterday but also the win at Killy last weekend. Does it feel like you're starting to get back on track?
Well, I don't want to say too much too soon, to be honest with you, because I think we were getting ahead of ourselves back in October, and then we've seen what happened. So, but yeah, I think they're still a work in progress, but it's definitely better than what it had been towards the end of the year there.
Do you think the return of Vucic Piazu can really push you on? Because obviously his start to the season was massive, and he just seemed to be like one of those players that was going to always be a threat up front.
Yeah, absolutely huge. I mean, he's a player, and for such a big guy, he can move and he's got skill, and you know, he's an absolute handful for defenders. I mean, the Livingston game, for example, when he came on Wednesday there, I mean, these are big, tough, physical boys, and he was just throwing them about like ragdolls. You know, it's incredible the size of the guy, and you know, he honestly reminds me of Lukaku a little bit. I mean, not on the same level, but in terms of what he gives you. And I think had he not had the injuries he's had, he probably would have been playing at a higher level, to be honest with you. But I think that's how Hearts have managed to get him. Because I think I read something that he's had 4 major injuries in the last 4 or 5 years. So I think that's probably where you can kind of worry about him. But if we can keep him fit and if he can get a run of fixtures, then I think he'll definitely be a key player for us.
Even Keane looked good at the weekend as well. So this boy's still only 19. He's been out at Dunfermline this season. Now he's just been called back. What can we expect from him in the second half of the season?
Well, I was quite disappointed that they actually sent him on loan at the start of the season, especially when we knew that we were losing Kyle Lafferty. I think there's a player there, and I think that the confidence from the young man to come on and take the goal as well as he did just shows you that there's an exciting future there for him. He was highly rated. I think it was John Daly that managed to get him in. I think it was last summer there, and he went on loan originally. I can't remember who it was, but he done quite well, scored a few goals in the lower leagues, and then he done well at Dunfermline, and he's came back, and he's got a good chance to stake a claim, and hopefully he'll score a few more before the end of the season.
So what do you hope for Hearts in the run into the end of the season? Because obviously, you said yourself, everyone was just getting a bit over the top with Hearts leading the league in the first 2 months of the season. So what do you want to see in the run-in?
Well, top three at the start of the season for me, it had to be the aim. I still think it's very achievable. You know, Kilmarnock and Aberdeen have done well, especially Aberdeen, to come from where they were at the start of the season. But I still think, man for man, Hearts are just as good, if not better, than those two sides. And I think as the season goes on, and looking at the run of fixtures, Kelly and Aberdeen have both still got to come to Tynecastle again. I mean, we've got to go to Pittodrie in the split, but, you know, there's no reason why we can't finish above those two and finish third. I think second will just be out of our reach. And hopefully, if the draw's kind to us tonight, we can see ourselves back at Hampden and have a crack at the cup.
Do you think Hearts have got a real chance of keeping hold of Stephen Naismith in the summer? Because obviously he's on loan at the moment, but there's talks about Birmingham wanting to grab him and Jume.
Yeah, I would say Naismith's more likely to stay than Jume, to be honest with you. But it's really difficult to say. You know, I didn't think we'd get him back this season, never mind keeping him after that. I don't know, I would say it's probably 50-50. I mean, if there's a huge money offer and it's right for him, he'll probably take it. But, you know, he seems to be settled up here. He seems to like the club. I think there's opportunities for him to progress his coaching career after he finishes football. He might just fancy staying up here. You know, you never know. He's different from your average footballer, I think. He looks at things differently. And I think the idea of him staying around this club and cementing, you know, history potentially, he might fancy it with some of the youngsters coming through that, you know, he might think to himself, well, actually, we've got a good chance of doing something here. I'll stick around. And hopefully that's the case. I mean, he's not money motivated, but, you know, he'll event a fair few bucks down at Norwich and Everton. So, you know, you never know. I think Jume's more likely to leave, to be honest with you. I think he'll want a crack down at England, and he probably deserves it. He's actually been excellent the last 3 or 4 months compared to the last year before that. Fair enough, he'd been injured, but his performances had been below his standard. He's coming back to his best, so I would be very shocked if a club didn't take a punt on him, especially on a free transfer.
So 2,000 Talbot fans came, right? It must have been quite a good fun.
Yeah, I think they brought more the last time, to be honest with you. But fair play to them. You know, they made plenty of noise, and it's a day out in the capital for them. So 3 o'clock kickoff, you know, I mean, they would have had a great time regardless of the result. And, you know, they backed their team right to the final whistle. So fair play to them.
I think you need the big team. And this is actually said by one of the managers. I can't remember who said it. But you need the big teams to have a bad day for you to have a hope of getting into it. And clearly Talbot were just, they're just not good enough. It's not a bad thing on them. They just were nowhere near the quality of Hearts.
It was just a step too far. Oh, yeah. As simple as, but yeah. it was certainly good to just see a side like that, you know, competing against a, you know, top flight team.
Hearts are too good this season as well.
Yeah.
Maybe if it'd been a lower league premiership for a higher end championship team, it could have been a tighter challenge, but...
Well, they had their big win. I mean, beating Ayr, you know, that's class.
That's a derby
win.
That's the one that'll go down in history.
Yeah.
That was really fun to watch as well, that win. Getting that far for a team that size is pretty massive. So just dine on that.
Nom, 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 nom.
Here's Stephen Dobie. Oh, that's outstanding. It's absolutely outstanding from Queen of the South's man of the moment. The King of Queens does it again.
Goal number 38 for Stephen Dobie this season in a Queen of the South shut. But Aberdeen have their own striker in sensational shape, Sam Cosgrove. He scored twice as Aberdeen ran out 4-1 winners at Pittodrie on Sunday. It's such a good goal from Dobie though, guys.
The best thing about it is the way he puts his foot straight through. So he's running, he's coming inside, but he puts his foot straight through it and it doesn't spin in the air, so it flies into the top corner.
I think Joe Lewis grabbed the ball afterwards and camera cut to him, and he was obviously berating his defence because there was a lot of space. But the thing is, like,
it should be fine for him to shoot from 30 yards.
Yeah, it should be. But then he did score a similar kind of goal against Dundee, didn't he?
Oh, but you can't predict that, can you? You can say, like, just don't make them score within... Like, your best place to score is within the box. That's economically the best place you'll score where all your highest XG is. But you can't just let them shoot from 30 yards. He's not going to put it top corner. Oh, he has.
Was this similar to, like, Talbot in a way that it was a step too far for Queen of the South, or were they actually really in the game?
It was absolutely nowhere near like Talbot. Queen of the South were right in the game. In the first half, Aberdeen were nowhere near good enough. I think you could see that Aberdeen had the better players in the first half, but they came into it with a very kind of tepid motivation. It just wasn't, they weren't right into the game, and it's as simple as that. They weren't getting anything done. Stevie May was running around for no real reason, just chasing things.
That's what Stevie May does, though, right?
That is what Stevie May does. He does it well. But there's no need for him when you've got Greg Stewart, because he's taken up Greg Stewart's space. At half-time, May comes off, McGinn comes on, changes the game. They also were just far more up for it in that second half.
So do you think McInnes just put a rocket up their ass?
I think, I don't even know if it's that. He was just being like, you are sitting high in the Premiership. You are very good players. Yeah. You can't just turn up and expect to roll over teams like this. This is the exact kind of performance where a lower league team will win if you play like that.
It happened in 08, didn't it?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. I mean, there's still... People still have scars from that. Like, oh, Queen of the South, I remember that name.
But you would, well, obviously you would have been supporting them in the cup final as well, because he got to the final that year, didn't he?
Well, this is the thing. That was Jamie Calderwood. It was it's when he had his... that was his dark days that started the downfall.
What a tan, though.
Do you think this is...
It's never dark where he is, yeah.
Do you think this is why the TV wanted to pick this one up? It's one of the broadcast games. Was it Shades of the 4-3 game back then?
Probably, because it's quite a romantic thing. It could have been... as well... They were in the games still leaving at like 2-1, I think, and then the penalty came along.
I felt really sorry for Queens because it wasn't a penalty. It actually comes off Andy Stirling's hip and then onto his arm.
He's right next to Logan and he jumps.
Yeah.
And his arms are in a totally natural place. It hits his chest.
It's one of those areas in the park where you obviously, anytime, you know, someone tries to whip the ball into the box and you're so close to the opposition player,
yeah.
The referee normally never gives that, but... Just because it's never deliberate, so...
Yeah, he's jumped to block the ball. His arm's not in a natural position, though.
No,
his elbow's not going far out.
I mean, it's just never a penalty, and it's a shame, and it just killed it off.
JJ, there's a little note here to remind me to ask why you hated the director cutting this game.
Oh, it wasn't that I hated it. Was... If anyone saw this game, you might know what I'm on about. A football game generally has been established that you film it from a wide...
Camera one position.
Oh, yeah, camera one position would be the wide angle view, and you see most of the pitch, a half of the pitch, maybe a bit zoomed in, and you cut away for certain bits, normally in replays.
Yes.
This guy was full on Orson Welles and going for. So there was a bit where GMS running down the right wing, and then he was. It's like if you play Grand Theft Auto and you push the circle button when you're driving it, and it shows you from cinematic view.
Yeah.
It's like that. And then...
so what did it go? Did it go, like, kind of by the pitch?
It was the guy in the Steadicam behind the goal.
Okay.
Behind the goal line.
Behind the goal?
Well, maybe maybe on the sideline. It looked... I mean,
yeah,
it was,
on the sides, fair enough, because that happens quite a lot.
But I thought from the way he was looking, it looks like he's from behind the goal. Anyway, it's not behind the net. But then it's a close-up of GMS dribbling. I'm like, what are you... I mean, it's quite cool, but it's cool when you go behind the scenes and you can look at the isolated camera angles and you can see what the game looks like from through those. But for an actual broadcast, it's not that it's different that I didn't like it. It's just that... It throws you off a wee bit. I mean, it's kind of cool on one hand.
It's good to try different things.
Yeah. Like, the reason I liked it is that the guy is obviously getting his big chance. This is one big chance.
Well, you don't know that.
Well, maybe I don't know that for sure.
You don't know that.
It'd be really funny if it was.
Experienced director.
The actual director was taken ill. He's like, can anyone fly this plane? He's like, I can. I've been waiting for my... He's been a janitor the whole time. I've been waiting in the shadows. Now is my time to step up. Look at me, Mum and Dad. And he's choosing that angle. And then, I don't know.
This is the... ninth quarter final in the last 12 attempts for Aberdeen. I'm sure you think they've got a really good chance of getting to another final at Hampden.
Hey, they can get a final going by the run they've had. We've seen 9 quarter finals in 12 attempts. Of course they can get to a final. Can they win it? Not a hope in hell's chance.
Man. If they're playing Celtic in the final, you're probably right, yeah.
Yeah.
Because who remind me which teams have beaten Celtic in the Scottish Cup over the last
Let's pay a little bit of attention to the Dunhamers. You know, Queen of the South are just outside the playoffs in the Championship, and Dobie's going to be the main man for them. 55% of their goals he's scored this season.
I did like what Liam McLeod was saying on comms for a BBC game.
Give us your best attempt.
Was he something like, forget about Messi, forget about Ronaldo, forget about
Lewandowski.
That's
what I said.
He's always in that tone. Da-da-da-da. And then he goes, it's Stephen Dobie. I mean... He's done well in the Scottish Championship. You know, he's scoring goals there, and he's scored a rocket.
The King of Queens.
It's a shame that he had that spell out. Not spell out, it was more a quiet spell, kind of around mid-October, mid-November time, because he kind of got a bit quiet in the goals front. If he'd kept that up, that consistency, then he could have been the top scorer in the whole Europe.
But I think to get, because of the way the point system works, you'd have to score about 80 million goals, wouldn't you?
He can't win the Golden Shoe because he's not in the top division anyway.
Golden Shoe?
Yeah. Is that not the new name?
It's now the Tartan. The Tartan Boot, is it not?
So it was a Golden Boot. That's how I always knew it. But then when I checked it earlier, it's called the Golden Shoe now. When did that change?
Is this for the Scottish Cup? Or
No, this is for the whole of Europe.
Really?
Yeah.
This is what happens when Stephen Dobie retires, is that there's a golden shoe left behind. You've got to find someone who can fit it.
I always thought it was called the Golden Boot, but now it's Golden Shoe, and it's only top top division. So it's a shame, you know, Championship players can't win it, but he would be up there in terms of goal numbers, because he's on 20 goals in the league just now, and Messi's on 21 for the league.
Oh well, let's hope there's still a Cinderella story in the Scottish Cup yet.
You're listening to the Totally Scottish Football Show with Andrew Slaven.
So if there's one thing this Kilmarnock Rangers saga needs, it's another game of football.
Yes.
Don't you agree?
But we're not going to talk about the football.
No, of course, we never do when it involves Kilmarnock and Rangers. But a 0-0 draw on Saturday. Rangers had four penalty awards not too long ago, and they got another one. Do you think it was a penalty?
What do you think first? Tell me about it.
So the way I look at it is it's harsh because Kurt Broadfoot's already on the ground, but he really dictates the flight of the ball and he kind of ends up kind of grabbing it.
Yeah.
So I don't think the referee can do anything but award a penalty. I'm kind of in the
I think it's a penalty. I think it's fair. Yeah.
Yeah, I think it's a penalty as well.
All right, let's move on.
In fact, I think it's not just a penalty, it's a red card as well.
But no, because I don't think he meant it.
Yeah.
No.
I think his hand's just there.
Yeah, I'm with JJ on that one.
No, he denied the opposition a goal scoring opportunity. But he cuddled the ball.
But he gives them one by giving a penalty. I don't know.
I don't agree with that. I don't agree with the rule. I don't like the rule where you punish a team twice.
Yes.
For a mistake. I'm very much against that rule. But in terms of the rule book, he denied a goal scoring opportunity with a handball inside the box. So it's a penalty and a red card.
Interesting.
Well, the best thing about the penalty decision is that it gave a chance for Daniel Backman to absolutely punt the ball about 20 miles in the other direction from the save. It's a great save. Although it's Tavernier hits it far too centrally. It's quite middle-y of the goal.
Yeah. It's Tavernier scored so many penalties.
Well, he's had so many penalties.
He's had so many.
There was a couple of other weird bits in this game, like Alan Power had his foot higher than Ryan Jack's head, and Ryan Jack seems to attract an awful lot of
studs.
A stud magnet.
Did you think it was reckless?
I know I wouldn't put my foot that high up playing at Sunday League, so I think if you're a Premiership footballer, I think you should know you can't do it, and especially in that tight area by the box.
Do you think Alan Power will be cited after this whole saga that we've had about Alan McGregor getting retrospectively banned, Morelos's thing being...
Do I think he'll be cited? I'm going to use my... I've got this from the SFA and how they help make decisions. I'm going to just flip it now, the coin, the head. So I think that means he won't be cited.
Nice.
But they might have changed the rules for that as well at some point. Maybe heads means he will be cited.
It's getting a bit personal between Steve Clarke and Steven Gerrard. So Clarke pointed out before the game, Jordan Jones had been retrospectively banned for diving while another player had been involved in a similar incident and not been banned.
Yeah, he was.
Are you with Clark?
Yeah, and also we were talking about this last week and saying how it's just comes at the back of a press conference with questions, but he used. Mm-hmm. I think he's totally right. And then against St Mirren, Defoe goes down far too easily.
We had Levine and McInnes, now we've got Gerrard and Clark having a go at each other. Gerrard saying that Clark is usually first class.
But Gerrard is. I think this is the way you can tell Gerrard's learning his trade as a manager, because Brendan Rodgers wouldn't rise to that. I think he was just trying to ignore it. If you take the bite, like he's bitten on it clearly, and I think Clark knows that you can wind him up, hoping that he'll make him make decisions that he shouldn't be making.
Yeah, the journalists have went fishing. They've taken it, and it's continuing to provide everyone with headlines throughout the week. And it's just this knock-on effect. And every time there's another press conference, the journalists will go to the opposition manager and go, well, he said, blah, 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 let's see how far we can take it until it gets to, like, day four, and you're like, right, this is getting ridiculous now. So they're winding each other up, and it's daft, and it can be petty, but at the same time, it's the ridiculousness of Scottish football, and it's still priceless.
Just to rattle through some of the moments that have happened recently, Alan McGregor being banned with his challenge about Lewis Ferguson, and Morelos's appeal was thrown out, and he's now having to serve a 3-match ban, now 2, because he didn't play in the Kilmarnock game. Do you think that's the right result?
Yes, it's absolutely. So now we know for certain, well, I mean, they could change it again, but you're not allowed to stamp on someone's testicles. That's been banned now.
Well, you're getting kicked in the face. Let's not pretend it wasn't a two-way street here.
Like,
it was very much
McKenna's kicking up, but he's not going for his face.
No.
And he touches his nose, and it's
no one was innocent in this challenge.
I'm not saying he was innocent either. But I'm saying, but you're just like I don't know why you're trying to like.
No, this isn't.
Have a go.
This is nothing to do with the opposition. The
Morello, Stamp, and McKenna.
The players are irrelevant. If a player goes up that high with a boot, you just said it with Alan Power. If a player does that and goes that high up in your face, it's a red card.
I think
it's
fair.
And if someone boots you in the balls, it's a red card.
Actually, at the time, I think that should have been yellow for both players,
Morelos
and McKenna,
I think,
manage the game.
But the way, from what my understanding is, referees before the season started were told any contact or any kind of motion towards the nether regions is kind of a straight sending off.
Yeah.
And, well, McKenna's reaction doesn't deserve a yellow, it deserves a red. You can't react to that. And I think his reaction.
I mean, within the context of the game,
he's going
for
the face.
Yeah.
I think it's fair. I think the referee got it spot on.
I think within the context of the game is what I meant, because it meant both players were sent off. I didn't expect Morelos to get sent off after he sent McKenna off. And also, the referee was desperate as soon as he saw that from McKenna to go over and send him off. Mm-hmm. It was just weird how that whole thing played out. It was actually quite funny to watch.
It was quite funny.
But then, like, that thing on you're not allowed to, any action in the nether regions. What happened in the... Who was it, the Hearts player that had his...
Stephen McLean on Ebuwe Kouassi.
Yes.
But he got cited for that.
Well, that's good.
Yes. Morelos wasn't cited for booting Brown in the plums.
No, and McGregor didn't get in trouble for kicking Ayer off the ball, but he did for this one on
Ferguson. As well. And then there was a couple of Celtic ones as well. There was Scott Brown on.
Yeah, that was
player,
a bad challenge this week.
And is everyone going for the balls?
I don't know.
It's a weakness. It's like in Zelda when you're trying to beat the boss, you've got to find the weakness.
Well, I mean, that's always my tactic. If I'm going to get jumped in the street, you go for the balls. But I don't think people are going to start doing
criminals?
It. I don't think this is going to become the 2018-19 Scottish season tactic.
Comes out to the Celtic captain. Oh, wow. Well, they don't come along very often. He's waited almost 2 years for a goal, Scott Brown. It was worth the
One thing's for sure, St Johnstone are definitely sick of the sight of Celtic this season. The third meeting between these two sides in 10 days, and it saw the Scottish Cup holders win 5-0, adding to their 6-0 victory over the Saints earlier in the season. 7 wins, 21 goals for Celtic in 2019, no goals conceded. Some reaction after losing to Rangers in the Derby, JJ. Albeit, they have played St Johnstone 3 times.
I mean, they're the best team in the country by miles, and they're just playing as they should do. I think that maybe that kind of defeat is what they needed to rattle the cage a bit and wake them up.
But it's the additions that Brendan Rodgers has made, really.
Oh, yeah, man.
But like Oliver Burke just seems to have so much. His acceleration and power is frightening. People say it, but it really is.
Yeah, his speed has been very impressive. I kind of said when he first came out a couple of weeks back, I'd be quite interested to see how he does, because I've only really ever seen him play for Scotland. And he was picked purely based on the fact that he played abroad. And it was meant to be, oh yeah, he's good now because he's a continental footballer. So I was always quite sceptical of Ollie Burke's skills. And now that I am seeing him come in, settle so quickly at Celtic, cause so many problems to the opposition, albeit always St Johnstone, he has been very impressive so far. And I'd like now to see the next test on Thursday night when they take on European opposition, because I'd like to see how he steps that up a level.
Mm-hmm. Someone who's been, you know, taking a fair bit of flack this season has been Scott Sinclair, but a hat-trick and 11 goals in 11 games for him. He seems to be very different from the player that he was when he first came into Scottish football, but he still knows how to get into certain positions to score goals.
Yeah, I mean, again, he's just a very good player, so he's going to get those chances for Celtic.
Do you think he's just a class above in the kind of football brain side? You know, is he just cleverer than most?
Like, his first touch is better than most. He's really quick. Like, his physical attributes make him a top Premiership player. And the way he thinks is quicker than most. He it's hard to describe it. How do you say what a good player is?
But why is he getting so much flack this season?
Because I don't think he was working as hard earlier in the season. I think he was kind of coasting because he knew he was that good. He didn't need to do the work. And then he lost his place. And then he's had to work to get back into it. And they brought players in, so there's actual competition now.
Big game at Celtic Park when they take on Valencia in the Europa League on Thursday. And I got a question on Twitter from official football person. Should Celtic start French Eddie on Thursday? So Edouard, just kind of back from injury, did play against St Johnstone. What do you think?
I think you should just go with the team that's playing right now and doing very well. I think Edouard can come on as a sub. If he's not match fit, there's no point putting him on straight away. You can bring him on and link things. They're at home, so they can attack a wee bit, but they've got to be careful because it's obviously a very good team. So you're naturally going to probably give possession to Valencia most of the time and try and hit him on the counter-attack, which suits people with pace. So people like Ollie Burke, that kind of player. And also, if Timothy Weah can play, and I mean, there's few humans in the world that can catch him.
Tranent's a very fast side. We look at Ryan Christie as well. Obviously, spoke about Scott Sinclair. Callum McGregor as well, sitting a wee bit deeper but has the pace. James Forrest, we all know how fast he can be. They're so quick. And it's not just the fancy footwork and the clever skills and being able to read a game. It is the speed as well. If a team cannot literally stop them in their tracks, they're just going to run riot.
It'll be a very different game, though, on Thursday against Valencia.
They won't get the same space. And I was looking at
a few of the stats. But they're quite aggressive, Valencia. And they've picked up like the second most yellow cards in the Champions League. So coming into this, like, it could be quite a physical tie, this.
It could be, but then a team from Spain being high up in yellow cards isn't quite the same when they come to Celtic Park and Scott Brun says hello. They're doing all right in La Liga, but that's a higher stock of the league. They've got better players. So
they did all right in the Champions League as well. They didn't lose.
Manchester United.
Yeah, they didn't lose to them over the two games. They drew them as well. So, I mean, 8 points from a Champions League group with Juventus and Man United, that's good going.
It'll be really interesting. I'm looking forward to it. And with Valencia without Gabriel and Batshuayi, who was pretty mince at Valencia anyway, Celtic could have a chance.
We should talk about St Johnstone very quickly before we move on. I quite like that Tommy Wright was saying before the game that their plan was to try and gain 10% possession because they'd be able to hurt Celtic that way. Well, Tommy,
what was his reasoning for that?
Well, if you have more possession, you can get more shots on goal, in theory, I guess. So they're always like getting killed, but 70-30. Well, Tommy's raised it to 47% in this game, and they managed one shot on goal. I think the strategy might just stick to being sit behind and hope for the best on the counter.
Parking the bus.
And now it's not, they don't have to worry about Celtic anymore.
Scottish Cup, unfortunately, but maybe that'll help them better off in the league going forward.
Yeah, they might not be playing Celtic again. They could be slipping down.
Yeah, but they are going back to Glasgow because they've got Rangers at Ibrox on Saturday. Plenty of SPFL action this weekend. Here's Neil White with the best of that from the Championship, League One and Two.
Hello, everybody. Only one game in the Championship this Scottish Cup weekend, but it was a significant one. Falkirk won 2-1 at Alloa and moved from the bottom of the table to eighth position. As you'll no doubt remember, Falkirk changed managers mid-season and then had a very busy January window. 12 in, 12 out. They've invested heavily in avoiding the drop. And they are unbeaten since the turn of the year and have won back-to-back games for the first time this season now. Jordan McGee headed them in front at Alloa. Connor Shields levelled with a neat finish for the home team. And then Mark Waddington, whose loan from Stoke was part of Falkirk's January shopping spree, won it with a messy affair at the back post. 3 points now between Partick Thistle at the bottom and Dunfermline in seventh. The bottom two, Partick and Alloa now, meet on Saturday. The bottom club also escaped the basement in League One. Stennis Muir took care of Montrose with a debut goal from Greg Hurst, a 21-year-old striker released by St Johnstone at the end of 2018. His goal takes Stenny a point above Dumbarton. At the other end, fourth removed level with second place Wraith with a 2-0 win over Airdrie. League Two, and the table was set for Clyde with 6 minutes to play. Peterhead and Edinburgh City, the top two, were playing out an attritional 0-0 draw in the northeast, and Clyde were a goal up at Annan. It was the scenario Clyde's manager Danny Lennon would have been dreaming about all week. But his team blew the chance to go level with Peterhead in second. Annan's Kyle Bradley, on loan from Rangers and off the bench at Gallabank, scored a crucial goal that maintains Annan's position in the final playoff position in League Two. Below them, Stirling Albion have won 5, drawn 1 since Christmas. They held on for a 2-1 win at Berwick after conceding late on. Stirling are 4 points away from the playoffs. At the bottom, Albion Rovers lost for the 17th time this season. 3-0 at home to Elgin, for whom defender Daryl McHardy scored a hat-trick. But Albion are not having quite as bad a season as the podcast favourites, Fort William. The bottom two in the Highland League met this weekend and Lossiemouth just edged it 5-0. Fort William are winless and remain on minus 7 points for the season after fielding an ineligible player three times.
As Neil mentioned, the top two in League Two met on Saturday, but there was no separating Peterhead and Edinburgh City. We're joined now by a real stalwart of the Scottish game, now the sporting director at Edinburgh City, it's Jim Jeffries. Jim, a decent point in the end, away at your title rivals.
Yes, obviously it's always a tough game to go up there, and we were probably, before the game, would have thought if we took a point, it wouldn't be the worst result, but we'll go to win every game, and there's no doubt it wasn't the best of games due to the conditions, very windy. I think that was evident in a lot of games at the weekend. But when we get a wee feeling coming back from the trip that we had probably the best couple of chances, but it was a good point for us because it means when they have a couple of games in hand, it means they've got to win those games, you know, which is never easy at this stage of the season.
Does that suit you guys then, if you're top now, 4 points clear? Is that going to suit you going forward, or just putting the pressure onto Peterhead? Do you prefer being in the lead at this stage?
Well, you know, there's ways to look at it because we've done fantastic this year. To be where we are after just being a couple of years in the league, we made a lot of changes, a lot of younger lads coming, a lot of personnel moved on, and you know, obviously, we didn't think at this stage it would be where we are, and so it's a credit to the staff and the players and everyone that's worked behind the scenes to get where, because we've been virtually at the top of the league for a good part of the season, but or most of the season. For anybody to overtake us, they've got to win their games in hand, but they're well capable of doing that, so we just have to make sure we've got them to play again, and it's all to play for between now and the end of the season.
Just picking up on your point about the fantastic work that you guys have done so far this season, you're right, and the fact that it's only been a few years since you've been at this level. We spoke to the manager, James McDonough, on this podcast before, and it's such an ambitious project at Edinburgh, and I suppose that's why they've got yourself in, got your experience into the club. And what do you see, like, the ambition for the club and for what you can bring to them?
When I was approached, you know, they heard me on a radio station saying, you know, if something came up that it would quite interest me and everything like that. And I knew he was the vice chairman at that time. Jim Brown was our chairman now. I've known him for quite a long time. So he phoned me up and asked me, you know, they've not got any contacts at that time. They had the previous manager who just done a fantastic job, brought them up from the East of Scotland League or the Lowland League. And, you know, to do that, get beaten the players, to go down, win the league again and then make it for the next time, deserves a lot of credit. And you get a couple of years where you try to establish yourself, and you know, I say to Jim, I would just be there to help, you know, I don't interfere in any of the picking the team. And I've always said just the same to James when we recruited James, I've interviewed him and got him. If he asks me and he wants an opinion, I'll give him it honestly. He doesn't have to take it because at the end of the day, he has to stand and fall with the results, not through somebody being told that what to do. So if James phoned me with chalk after, mostly on a Sunday after each game, about the game, he's doing a fantastic job. And of course, I'm there to help because I know a lot of people in the game. And when we're targeting players like we have done at the start of the season, then I'm involved in the talks with James and the chairman to get that player on board within the budget. And that was a big decision we had to make at the start of the season, because the boys who had done a fantastic job bringing us up and keeping us there for a couple of seasons, some of them were coming to their last stages of the career, and I felt for us to move on, we needed to support James and getting some players who maybe even played at higher clubs and didn't work out for them and hungry enough to want another challenge to try and prove they can do it. And I think that's what we've benefited from. They're a good squad. We've still got two or three experienced players, but you know, we've got good legs about them. We're more mobile now, and I think people are pleasantly surprised how well we've done. we'd be delighted. I mean, it'd be a fairy tale to win the league, but if we're finishing playoffs or the top three, that is just a marvellous, marvellous season. And it's just a springboard to try and, you know, if it doesn't happen this year, we use that as the springboard to try and get promotion as quick as we can.
Definitely. I think it must feel pretty special being part of an ambitious project like that. But then, were you tempted when there was talk of Neil McCann having you in at Dundee to oversee that? Would it have been a similar role you would have done there, that when you're talking to them?
Yeah, well, Neil phoned me up, and I think he was at the stage where things were rolling. I think he needed, you know, after speaking to John, he asked me to have a chat with John Helms. John Helms had probably favoured the idea of somebody with my experience, been there, done it. Maybe the fact that Edinburgh City were going well, and I could give Neil a bit of advice because I knew him well. I think that Neil was looking for somebody not to come in and challenge his job, which he knew I wasn't. It was just to help him, and it was a terrific offer. And I felt sorry for Neil because it was a difficult time for him, and just turning around my head all the time saying, you know, I'd love to help him, but it wasn't practical for me. And obviously, Edinburgh City flying. In fact, I spoke to Dundee the same night we played Arbroath, who were running away with the division above us, and we absolutely played terrific that night. So I think after that game, I thought, they really want to give this up because it suits me fine. It's getting to Edinburgh is no problem in that. But when you're talking about getting to Dundee in the morning and the things as they were with Neil, if he'd lost maybe a couple of games, it might have been a big change for a very short time. So it didn't really, but I was very, you know, flattered to be asked and considered.
So it's going great in the league just now, Jim, for yourself, and it's also going great in the Edinburgh Cup as well. So next up, Saturday night game, Connachty Nomads. What would it mean to the club to get to the final?
Well, it's fantastic that we're talking about playing in a semi-final of Challenge Cup because, you know, you've got to come through the early rounds, and then we played Alawa, who are in the Championship. Yeah. We've played them at home, we've given them 2 goals a start, and we end up beating them, it was a 4-2, and, you know, that was just an unbelievable result after knocking Arbroath out as well, which are a division, as I say, they're running away with the league and above us, so what great confidence it was boosting. Probably that's helped us in our league programme, in our own league. There's no doubt about that, the confidence that we got. But we know it's a semi-final. It's going to be tough. The Welsh League is what it is in terms of... it's a little bit of unknown to us in terms of the, you know, level they're at. It's a well-run club. And I spoke to the manager a couple of weeks ago. He was at our game. It'll be tough, but if we play as well as we did against Alawa and a lot of the games this year and Arbroath, then we'll have a chance. And what a fantastic day to look forward to if we can get through to the final on Saturday night.
You're listening to the Totally Scottish Football Show with Andrew Slaven.
It's another long ball and more problems for the home side. It's Nicky Clark! What a finish! Exquisite stuff from the United attacker.
Elsewhere in the Scottish Cup, St Mirren 1, Dundee United 2. The Championship side through to the quarter-finals. This is one of those shocks that wasn't really a shock.
Yeah, I think if you knew how bad St Mirren have been recently, I think quite a few would have tipped Dundee United. I mean, this could be a playoff final in the making.
Yeah, I mean, it's the first time we've kind of seen Noran Kearney really damning of his team. Said the first half was embarrassing.
Yeah, I mean, at some point you just go, well, I mean, I've given you, I'm out.
He's normally so positive and kind of tries to find the good things to mention, but he had to be
honest. They're making him look a fool now. It's lowering his stock is the thing. I mean, they're now pumped out of the Scottish Cup by a lower league team. That's never good on your CV. Mm-hmm. But it's the players that are doing it, you know.
But a lot of these players are his players that he's brought in now.
True. But I mean, like, they could have been down to 10 men, like, quite early. Paul McGinn put his forearm through Cammy Smith, who used to play for St Mirren, obviously. I'm surprised Colum didn't send him off there. Willie Colum Sorry, I just said I'm surprised Willie Collum didn't. I'm not at all surprised that Willie Collum missed something, but maybe he was trying to manage the game or something. It looked like a clear red card to me going straight through him.
Callum Butcher was sent off though, and Robbie Nielsen agreed with that decision. I mean, when you see it, it's like, bloody hell.
If you've not seen it,
it's the one in it's like the halfway line, and he just chops him.
He just kicks him.
Yeah, like, it's kick. Really close range as well. It's not even like you can.
I like the way they kind of conjoin like two insects mating as they fall to the floor as well, because they've both got their studs up like chest
high.
Yeah,
that's true.
And then the studs come down into the nether regions, as we've been discussing throughout today.
Yeah,
but clear red.
Things are going well for Dundee United just now, though.
They brought in 11 players, didn't they?
Yeah, it's all changed. One defeat since the turn of the year. Something like 1,500 fans travelling as well down to Paisley for the game.
It did look good. Yeah. It looked good down that end of the pitch, all those fans.
I think that really helps, having a big away support.
Take up a full stand. I think it's so tight in Paisley as well, which is good. And I think kind of just the fans are getting behind Robbie Nielsen now, and now he's stamped his look on the squad. And the results have picked up. I think it's a kind of good time to be had at Tannadice just now.
What time is this game kicked off? Is it 3 on the Saturday?
Yeah.
I see. I thought maybe that Nicky Clark had inspired Genie Wijnaldum for his finish.
It was very similar, wasn't it?
Beautiful controlled lob of the keeper. Similar. I mean, the keeper's quite out of position, frankly.
Lovely. I would say that.
But he takes him by surprise as well.
Yeah, I would say that's up there with Scott Brown and Stephen Dobie's goals, definitely from this weekend.
Well,
I liked it a lot.
We do have a Championship side through to the last 8. Partick Thistle. Gary Caldwell's side won 1-0 against East Fife at Bayview, one of the most exposed grounds in Scotland.
That's what I would call your house if you moved next door to me.
Yeah, you see me through the window.
Yes,
just toweling myself.
I'm in a bush, toweling myself.
Wow.
Yeah, sorry, Laura.
That escalated
quickly.
I'm not
sure what Laura's doing in this situation, but presumably GMS is there.
Storm Eric was kind of there.
Oh, I heard about this. So Connor Hazard took a back pass and booted it upfield, but it was so windy, the ball came right...
For Partick Thistle or East Fife?
For Partick Thistle. And it was so windy, the ball went flying back to him. So he had to catch it. And the ref gave an indirect free kick to East Fife.
That's amazing. I love that.
Apparently the Thistle fans were raging. Imagine if that gone in.
There's also a surprising part during the game when it was quite tight that Partick Thistle kidnapped all of the East Fife players. Because of their training.
Their SAS training, I presume you're alluding to.
Can we please never forget this story? Keep bringing it back up every few weeks.
We shan't. But that's good. So it often helps you when you're doing badly in the league that you get a bit of a cup run.
Yeah.
And that seems to be happening at Partick just now.
As we record this, Ross County will be taking on Inverness and a Highlands derby.
Heelan derby.
And the Heelans.
Yes.
So there will be another Championship side in the last 8. So the draw is looking pretty tasty. Hibs are in the hat for the 6th round. They beat Raith Rovers of League One by 3-1. Mark McNulty on the score sheet as well, on loan from Reading. I think he played his part in the second as well. I think he had a pretty decent game.
Hibs were very good in this game. Raith Rovers were not. And it was here, actually. It was John McGlynn, Raith Rovers manager, who said that for them to get anything out of it, they needed the big team.
Oh, yeah, you were saying this.
The big team has to have an off day, and they have to have like 9 out of 10s all across the board. But so it's impossible. And Hibs were absolutely fine. I mean, Eddie May's not going to be in charge because they're bringing in, they're going to bring someone in. Well, Eddie May said after the game, they think it'll be next week. Mm-hmm. And the favourite, according to the bookies, is Michael Appleton.
Yeah, so he's managed recently as well. I remember he was at Leicester.
Yeah, I don't know if he's any good because he's done nothing good at any of the clubs he's been at. His win percentage record at Oxford United is 45%. I mean, that's decent enough. But Blackburn Rovers, disaster, 26%. Blackpool... He had 12 games, sure enough, that was enough, 16%. He was at Portsmouth before that as well, another 25. Like, it's just, I don't know if Hibs could have held out for someone who had been a bit more expensive and has a clearer ascent towards stardom.
Do you think that, you know, the name that is Neil Lennon and then going for someone like Michael Appleton, is it a bit of a...
Appleton's won, so it's, Neil Lennon had won stuff, so he won stuff for Celtic and he had a very tough job at Bolton, was doing okay. He had proof of trying to start at a lower team and do something with it, and he clearly knew what he was doing at Celtic. I mean, it's easy enough to win anything with Celtic, really, as long as you're not an idiot, you can win with Celtic at the moment, and that's fair enough, right?
Yeah,
I could win the league with Celtic, doesn't it?
No, you couldn't.
I could.
It doesn't work that way.
It could.
I don't know. Is it something to do with like keeping it under the radar? Like, they've had a bit of something clearly happen with Neil Lennon, they don't want the drama. So let's just go for someone that's kind of unknown, so to speak. I just don't get what the attraction is with him. What has he done?
Can't go under the radar. He's massive.
He's not unknown at all.
He is an absolute rock.
For doing what? He's
for
not
being
done anything.
Hard as nails.
Well, that's all he's known for. Career-wise, he's done nothing.
He's linked with a lot of clubs, though. Exactly, but then his name was in the metaphorical football hat.
There are a lot of people. There are a lot of managers who have came from nothing. Jose Mourinho for one, Eddie Howe for another. You know, these people are out there.
Haven't played. Yeah,
it's a shame they could have went for Ian Cathro.
Well, I was about to. So this is my calm down, Hibs fans, right? So I'm not really saying that Cathro should go.
Sorry, I'm just throwing it out there.
But I've been doing a thing for my job as a football writer, looking at when managers peak and when their best years are, and generally the best managers have won something by the time they're 43, like at least a lower league division. So like I would say a title of some sort, a domestic cup, a league title. Appleton just now is 43. And has not really shown that you can do anything other than just do quite well at Oxford. And I think when you look at some of the managers that you could get, look at in Germany, you've got like Julian Nagelsmann, who's younger than me, and he's a star. There must be someone like that in the coaching thing in Scotland. And maybe they're just losing it and you want someone with experience in this. And the Cathro thing was a disaster at Hearts. So that's your litmus test. If that didn't work, then we can't try this again. But I think there must be other managers, coaches around that could do something.
I just feel as if I was a Hibs fan, I would be very underwhelmed by this. For going from...
It screams mid-table, doesn't
yeah,
it?
Yeah, from going from Neil Lennon, and he very much, as a man, splits opinions. But as a manager, looking from the outside, he is controversial, he is ambitious... He's loud and he goes for it and he'll not let anyone mess him around or his teams around. And he's got that strength and he applies it into the players as well. So when you've seen a manager basically take the squad by the scruff of the neck and shake them up, to then have somebody else come in and be,
But you can't, obviously that wasn't working with the players at Hibs. So shaking them about was doing nothing. So they maybe need something else. Well, maybe, but then you need to different change of, and that doesn't necessarily mean that you know what you're doing as a manager. It's about how do you motivate your players, and if you lose the room, then it's very hard to get it back. I don't know what Appleton's like as a person.
From a supporter's perspective,
because
they're seeing somebody so dominant take control, and I just feel like this is quite underwhelming compared.
But from a supporter's perspective as well, season tickets are an all-time high, and that's probably down to the attacking style of football that Hibs have been playing, and it's been excellent
to watch.
And last season, even before this season kicked off, I even labelled them the entertainers. So if Appleton comes in and doesn't continue that brand of football, who knows what could happen. But hopefully it's just a good thing for Hibs. They can move on from this situation and they can still challenge for top six.
I would say with Appleton is that he does come from like kind of high stock. So when you he's trained at Man United when he came with the youth team, so he's used to playing at a high level. And coaching wise, I mean, he was a caretaker at Leicester because he was an assistant, right? So that's the thing. So he'll have his badges and whatever, but you look at Steve Clarke, who's dismissed as being a nonsense, and to get a team right in Scotland is very simple. You generally make them hard to beat and you make them good on the counter-attack. The Hibs are good players who can do that. Maybe you'll change the style of play, which might ruin them to watch, but they might win more games. What's better, to look good or to win games? Well, do you know what? I don't know.
The Scottish Women's Premier League kicked off this weekend with victories for Celtic and Motherwell. Andrew Southwick from BBC Scotland joins us now. With the national team qualifying for the World Cup, has the interest in the SWPL kind of gained a lot of momentum recently?
Yeah, when they qualified 2 years ago for the European Championships, that kind of, before that happened, I think a lot of people didn't actually realise Scotland had a football team and didn't realise that Scotland had a league as well. So from then it's grown, and then obviously the World Cup qualification, it's... I wouldn't say it's rocketed. I don't think, if you go to a game that you see massive crowds, but it's now getting reported on a lot more. The media interest is really risen. And we'd like to see, from a crowd point of view, we'd like to see a lot more this season. I think the average crowd's maybe only around about 200. I think they could do a lot more. But, certainly a lot more interest, which is good.
It's been a difficult month for the men at Hibs, but the women's side have had a difficult pre-season as well, haven't they?
Well, unfortunately, just because of the nature of Scottish women's football, they don't really have full-time contracts. So You know, Hibs had such a good team last season. They were so good to watch. And they've now lost 8 of those players to England to full-time contracts, which is good for the players to, you know, progress themselves and get those contracts. But it has weakened Hibs considerably. So I think the actual Scotland international team, I think only 4 players are actually based in Scotland. But there's still a lot of good talent. Hibs, I've mentioned them, but they've still got some great young players, you know, like Shannon McGregor, Jamie Lee Napier, Chelsea Cornet. They've got Rachel Small, who's had a baby, so she was out for a year. So now she's come back. She's trying to get herself back into the Scotland squad for the World Cup, so be interested to see if that happens. And, you know, Celtic have signed well. Glasgow City are always going to be up there. And Motherwell have got a good team as well. So, it's, you know, it's a lot of good players to keep your eye on.
So Glasgow City are going for their 13th title in a row. How have their preparations gone?
Well, they've lost Abby Grant, who was arguably their best player. She went to Anderlecht. But actually, they're pretty much still intact. You know, like Hibs have lost 8 players. Glasgow City haven't lost anywhere near that amount. It'll be interesting to see what challenge they get this season. It'll be interesting to see how Hibs cope with that loss. Hibs have still got such a good youth system. They've still got so many youth players coming through that it's too early to write them off. Celtic, you'd expect, will be stronger this season. They started the season really well with a 4-0 win of a 4-4. They've got a great manager in Eddie Lickie-Black, who's won the title 4 times with Glasgow City. So you couldn't write them off either. So, I mean, it's one game, but I do think Glasgow City will win the title again. Unfortunately, from perspective of you want to see more competitive, but at the same time, you've got to admire Glasgow City massively for the fact that there's all these big clubs, there's Rangers, Celtic, Hearts, Hibs, Motherwell, and yet this one self-sustained club is still keeping everyone at arm's length. So it'll be interesting. I think it definitely will be more competitive in the sense that Glasgow City and Hibs, out with the games between the two of them last season, they won every domestic game. I don't think that will happen. Well, it's not going to happen for Hibs because Hibs drew yesterday. I don't think it will happen for Glasgow City either. I think the Cups will be really competitive as well. A lot of clubs, even outside the top flight, Motherwell got to the Cup final last season. Hearts, expecting a lot from them. Celtic, they've been in a Cup final for the past 2 seasons. I wouldn't be surprised to take a one better and actually win one this season. So from that point of view, it will be interesting, but I would be surprised if Glasgow City make it 13-0.
Celtic have also announced their intention to go full-time, and some of the other giants in the Scottish game are looking to go big with their women's teams, aren't they?
Yeah, it's going to be really interesting to see how that pans out. It should be noted it hasn't actually happened yet. They haven't actually gone full-time yet. So Celtic expect maybe to go, they're hoping to go full-time as early as the summer, so in time for the second half of the season. Rangers said they're going to treble investment in their team. I don't know when that's going to happen. I know Hearts have said they're going to make a 6-figure investment in their team, but apparently that's not going to happen until November, which is the end of the season. Obviously, there's other clubs as well. Aberdeen have kind of taken their women's team in-house. Motherwell, Partick Thistle, Dundee United, they're all taking it really seriously. So I actually wrote an article last week and I'd said that, you know, this is going to be the most important season in women's football history and they has to be really good this season. But then I think I've kind of backtracked in that and maybe it's a little bit premature because Scottish women's football is going through a revolution at the moment and it's maybe, you know, this is the beginning. You've got the World Cup qualification. Scotland will get the legacy of that. Celtic, Rangers, all that, taking it with their increased investment. But maybe this season might just be a little 1 year too early to see the impact of that. And maybe it's more likely that, you know, next season we'll really see Celtic, you know, up at the top, really winning the league and stuff. They've obviously got ambitions of the Champions League as well. So I think it'll be a tough call for them to do it this year. They have actually only signed to date 4 players. So it's not like they've made a massive overhaul in their squad. But it'll be interesting. Certainly when they do go full-time, it will be interesting to see how that works out. I know they've been trying to sign players from within Scotland and they missed out on them because these players want to go to England because that's a full-time league. It'll be interesting, but then obviously if Celtic can get themselves in the Champions League, then it's a kind of different ball game because, you know, people want to play in the Champions League. At the moment, Glasgow City and Hibs are the only 2 teams that can offer it.
Well, that's it from us. We'll be back on Monday as the Premiership returns. Kelly look to beat Celtic for the 2nd time this season at Rugby Park, and we'll see you then.
You've been listening to the Totally Scottish Football Show, a Muddy Knees Media production. For sales and advertising, email sales@muddyneesmedia.com and be sure to check out our other football shows on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Audioboom and everywhere else you get your audio on demand.